Shimanasi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Purport. There are many theoretical philosophers in the world who put forward their own theories of cause and effect, especially about the cause of suffering and its effect on different living beings. Generally, there are six great philosophers. Kanada, the author of the Vaisheshika philosophy. Gautam, the author of logic. Patanjali, the author of mystic yoga. Kapila, the author of Shankya philosophy. Jaimini, the author of Kama Mimamsa. And Vyasadeva, the author of Vedanta Darshan. Although the bull, or the personality of religion, and the cow, the personality of the earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was the direct cause of their sufferings, still, as devotees of the Lord, they knew well also that without the sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Purana, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. But even those seedling sins also gradually fade away by the execution of pure devotional service. And thus even the devotees seize the mischief mongers. They do not accuse them for the sufferings inflicted. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, for otherwise the suffering should have been much greater. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to get a statement of accusation against the direct mischief monger, but they declined to give it on the above-mentioned grounds. Speculative philosophers, however, do not recognize the sanction of the Lord. They try to find out the cause of suffering in their own way, as will be described in the following verses. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, such speculators are themselves bewildered, and thus they cannot know that the ultimate cause of all causes is the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. Om Ajnanam Tunam Janam Janam Shalakaya Chakshurumir Tanjina Tasmaya Sri Devinaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Karaha Shivashari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hari 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 Rama 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 Hari Hari. Nabayam Klesh Bijami Jathashu Purushar Shabha Purusham Tham Vijanimo Makya Veda Vimohit. O greatest among the human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all these different opinions of theoretical philosophers. So here Dharma is answering Maharaj Parikshit questions that who has beaten you, who has beaten this bull and cow? So Dharma is replying that it's very difficult to tell you who has actually beaten us, because there are so many philosophers put forward on the causes of, especially the cause of suffering, or the cause of action and reaction. And here Prabhupada has mentioned that there are six philosophers, great philosophers. Most any other philosophy will come from these six, these branches of these six, but generally these are the six basic philosophies that people tend to use. And Kanada, the author of the Vaisheshika philosophy, Gautam, the author of logic, Pantanjali with the mystic yoga system, Kapila, the Shankhya philosophy, Jaimini, the author of Kama Mimamsa, and Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedic Vedanta Darshan. So most of these philosophies, actually all of them, they're more or less all based on speculation. That these philosophers have tried to work it out in their own heads. You know, getting actually towards what is the cause of everything. And so you get all these different types of philosophers. Kanada and Vaisheka, they're more or less saying that material nature is the cause of everything. Atomic combinations, like modern scientists, they have this theory. Their theory is, they have both theories, atomic combination and it's just nature. But they don't recognize who's behind the nature, or whose nature it is. When they say it's happening, you know, it's just nature, it's just the way it happens in nature, you know. Then Prabhupada says, then the next question is, whose nature? It's got to be someone's nature. When you say nature, so the next question is, whose nature? But that they're not recognizing whose nature it is. So they end up speculating, and on the ultimate cause of everything, the Kama Mimamsa philosophers, they believe in just doing your work. You should do your prescribed duties and work, because then you'll get the result anyway. Persons who do their prescribed duties, they get the result automatically. So there's no need to worship any god, because if you don't do your work, you're not going to get the result anyway. So it's dependent on your work. So actually your work is the most important thing. Krishna was preaching to his father when on Govardhan Leela, he was using this philosophy, he was actually speaking like an atheist. It's atheistic philosophy in Krishna. Nanda Maharaj says, well, we're performing this just to please Indra because he wants some rain, and you know, we depend on the cows, so we need grass for the cows. So we give Indra puja and he gives the rain and the grass comes and the cows are happy. So then Krishna was using this philosophy to defeat Nanda Maharaj. Kama Mimamsa philosophy. Well, it rains everywhere. When Indra sends rain, he sends on the seas, he sends on the mountains. They don't need water there. He's obliged to do it anyway. But the reason he's obliged is because we're doing our work. If we didn't do our work, he wouldn't send it. But because we're doing our proper activities, then the result will come automatically. But even if there is a God, what need is to worship? Because he's dependent on our activities anyway. Because he's not going to give them without our activities. So if we perform our activities, then he'll get the result anyway. So why worship? So just do your nice work. Just do nice work and do your dharmas. And because ultimately happiness is what everyone wants. But then you won't get better happiness in this. So this is their philosophy. You just do your work nicely and you'll get whatever happiness. The best happiness you can get is just to stick to your particular duty and dharma. So of all these philosophies, most of them, they are failing to recognize behind everything is the Supreme Person of the Godhead, is the sanction of the Super Soul is mentioned here. And although it mentions the Vedanta Darshan of Vyasadeva, it's just the way Vyasadeva has compiled all these, the Vedanta Sutras and things like that, it's really open for speculation. Although within the Vedas that the truth is contained there, but most people misinterpret the Vedas. Or the Upanishads, they're saying ultimately the Brahma Jyoti is supreme, there's nothing beyond that, everything emanates from Brahma Jyoti. But Krishna says, Brahmanyo pratishtata, what is it? Pratishtam, Brahmanyo pratishtam. That it's emanating from me, Bhagavad Gita said. That Brahman is emanating from me. Brahma Samhita, Yasha, Prabhupada, it's the glow of the body of Krishna. So they're all failing to recognize the personality of Godhead. So therefore, they're all speculative and they don't give the actual goal of life because they don't come to the point of bhakti because they're not recognizing the personality behind it. Therefore, bhakti is the only path of true understanding. And in this way we can get the proper result, and we're understanding that directly the cause is person, not inert atoms. The Vedas say that no, the Supreme Lord is conscious. Every within and without anything, within the atom, his consciousness is everywhere. So it's consciousness that makes things go, not inert atoms or anything like that. So therefore, these philosophies, although generally they will compromise when they have these meetings and everything, they compromise and they say, well, actually, it doesn't really matter what path you follow. Because you're not going to end up with God anyway. You're either impersonalist or you're just atheist. So there's no mention of God. So anyway, it doesn't really matter what you do, what path you follow. More or less, they usually compromise like that. But you see, the devotees, they never compromise. They always stick to their point. That's why we criticize sometimes. But and Prabhupada says, Dharma is saying we're bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Prabhupada, I can't remember where he says it, Prabhupada says, we become embarrassed by so many different philosophers. So many different philosophers, you become embarrassed, you don't know which one to choose. So, here, although actually Dharma knows, Dharmaraj, okay, the Bull, he knows, but he's speaking like this, and he's going to present different philosophies also. But Prabhupada goes on to point out, because actually they were devotees, so they understood, that no one could inflict trouble upon them without the sanction of the Lord. So, Pariksit Maharaj's question, who has done this to you? Now they're saying, now if we say Kaliraj has done it, which he did, he was there beating him with the stick, then according to the laws of karma, we have to get that back. That's our karma coming back. And who's the cause of our own karma? We're the cause of our own karma. So is it Kali at fault, or are we at fault for the punishment? Whose fault is it? So they declined. We can't say. They're telling me. We can't say. We can't directly accuse Kali Raj, because obviously it's a reaction for our previous activities. So actually we're the guilty ones. So what can they, if they point their finger at themselves, Pariksit Maharaj is not going to beat them. You're the simple ones. So, Prabhupada says they knew well that they knew without the sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them, because nothing happens without the sanction of the Lord. So he said, thus even the devotees see mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for the sufferings inflicted. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, for otherwise the suffering should have been much greater. So this is the attitude of a devotee. This is the Tatkitinu Pampamkam verse, which I'll read, and the purport, which is exactly what they're speaking here. And which it's the philosophy that devotees have, they should have, and Prabhupada mentions, I believe, in the Nectar of Devotion, that the devotees should base their Krishna consciousness on this understanding, on this philosophy. It should be the basis of Krishna consciousness philosophy, something like that. There's one devotee, what's his name? Another devotee who's on the Polish tour now. He's taken over from Sri Prahlad, singing. He's in the Abhay Charan film. Huh? Yeah, Chandrasekhar Prabhu. He was here during the flood, the big flood. Water came so high. So he was with Kalyapani Prabhu, and they were going around, swimming around, investigating. They went to the Samadhi, and they were climbing up on the Samadhi, and they're beautiful, you know, deep waters everywhere. That's how they just diving, going to different places, and just diving off. So they went up on the Samadhi, and they went up these high points, and then he dived, you know, beautiful sunny day, and he dived in the water. And it was right, the water level was just above one dome or something like that. It was just concealed. So he went straight into the dome. Kadi said, oh, you know, all the blood was coming out. He sat up and he went, Tatino Pankam. Immediately he chanted this verse. He's quite Krishna conscious. Although it was a very dangerous situation. He could have been knocked unconscious. How long are you going to last in the water? But anyway, he immediately chanted this verse. Kali Pani was saying, I was really surprised, you know. I was shocked. He just, Tati Nupam Kam, the blood was running down his face. The Tati Nupam Kam Shu, Sham Mikshano, Mano, Vuchanaigatma Kritam Jepakam, Kirit Bhag Bapur B, Vidahan Namaste, Jiveta Jo Mukti Padasa Dayaba. Translation. My dear Lord, one who earnestly awaits for you to bestow your causes mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has simply to remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the relative principles of Bhakti Yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the Personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the Kingdom of God. The word su samik shamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind, a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, The Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotees punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Dayabhak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. Very nice. So here is the devotee's conviction and faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he becomes completely dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even in the acts of suffering, the so-called suffering in the material world, he still sees it as his worshipful Lord. Krishna is so kind. He's just given me a token, Prabhupada used the word token punishment sometimes. He's just given me a token punishment. Prabhupada said, you may cut your finger. He said, but actually it should have been your whole hand cut off. He said, but Krishna reduces it. You just cut on your finger. So a devotee sees like this, that anything that happens, Krishna is so kind, he's just giving me token punishment. Seems to rectify my mentality for enjoying this material world. I should be accepting much, much more punishment this because of my sinful activities in this life and previous life. This is the devotee's attitude. And he sees in every way that anything that happens is Krishna's. It says that here, it may appear like suffering, but it's actually a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of Krishna. And Krishna personally does take charge of his devotees. It's not a karmic reaction. The devotee thinks it's a karmic reaction out of his humility. He thinks that I am so sinful. I've been so sinful, I know I've got hundreds of sins in my heart, therefore I'm getting all this trouble. But actually it's not, technically it said it's not sinful because he's taken to the process of devotional service and Krishna says, that I'll take care of everything. I take care of my devotee. This is also explained in the Brahma Samhita. Although the Padma Purana presents our trouble due to the fructifying of seedling sins within the heart, there are different beaches, seeds in the heart, and some are lying unmanifested, some are just sprouting. And some are actually manifesting. So that the present suffering that we're going through, or the present happiness, is a seed that's just coming to bloom. So it was there, it's been there a long time, it's just something coming, it's something we deserve, either happiness or distress. It's suddenly coming to bloom, but there's plenty more there, they're just starting to come to the small shoot. There are plenty more there that are still in seed form, they haven't taken, they're waiting to come up. You know, there's millions of them because of our previous activities, all these seeds. Every activity and desire, it creates a seed. So that thousands of desires we have, they're all stocked up in there. But he says here that the devotional service to the Lord, that even gets rid of all those seeds. Whereas generally most of the processes of self-realization, they just get rid of the seeds that are manifesting now. They can stop those, but they don't get rid of the unmanifested seeds, the seeds that haven't begun to sprout yet. But the process of devotional service, it gets rid of everything. This is described in the Brahma Samhita, text number 54. Yastuindra gopam avadendra maho svakarma vandana rupa palavajanam atnoti karma nyanira tatikintu chapakti bhajam Govinda Mari Purusham Samaham Bhajan. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns up to their roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion, and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities, of all those who walk in the path of work, in accordance with the chain of their previously formed work, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indragopa and that of Indra, king of the Devas. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's language, a little bit difficult. Try to listen to this. God impartially induces the fallen souls to act in the way that is consequent on the deeds of their previous births, and to enjoy the fruition of their labors. But out of his great mercy to his devotees, he purges out by the fire of ordeal the root of all karma, all the nescience and evil desires. Same thing he said in the other verse. He purges out by the fire of ordeal. What did he say? Those penances and austerities, he said, that may seem not so pleasant, but that is the purging out the fire of ordeal that the devotees, they go through that, they purge their own. Karma, though without beginning, is still perishable. The karma of those who work with the hope of enjoying the fruits of their labors become everlastingly and endlessly, and it is never destroyed. The function of sannyas is also a sort of karma befitting an ashram, and is not pleasant to Krishna when it aims at liberation or desire for emancipation. They also receive fruition of their karma, and even if it be disinterested, their karma ends in atma mamata, or self-pleasure. But those who are pure devotees always serve Krishna by gratifying his senses, forsaking all attempts of karma and jnana, and being free from all desires save that of serving Krishna. Krishna has fully destroyed the karma, its desires, and nescences of those devotees. It is a great wonder that Krishna, being impartial, is fully partial to his devotees. So here, he's saying that Krishna, when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then Krishna actually burns all of those seeds in the heart, even the ones that aren't manifesting at all. No other thing can get to those seeds because they're practically unmanifested. You can get to the ones that have started to manifest through knowledge, the process of yin. You can get rid of so many seeds, etc. But the ones that are lying there unmanifested, you can't get rid of those until they come up. Then you work, you do your sadhana, etc. to destroy those. But here, it says Krishna personally burns up all of those seeds in the heart for the devotee. So therefore the path of devotion is much easier than the other paths, because here the devotees completely depend on Krishna and Krishna's mercy. Whereas on all the other paths of self-realization, more or less they're dependent on their own abilities, on their own strength, their own intelligence, their own practice of sadhana to achieve the desired goal. So it's very difficult for them, it's troublesome. But they can achieve it here. He says in this purport that even the function of sannyas is also a sort of karma, befitting an ashram. And it's not really pleasant to Krishna, because it's aimed at liberation. Yet the general meaning of sannyas in the Varnashram system, path of mukti. So they say it's an ashram, they're in the sannyas ashram, and they're performing karma. Although they're niskarmis, they don't perform karmic activity. Their karma is work for liberation. And they take the sannyasram, and they're working for liberation. And they even get that. He says here that it's not very pleasing to Krishna. Why is it not pleasing to Krishna? Because actually it's pleasing for them themselves. It ends in atma mamata, which means self-pleasure. So even that path of liberation, which is free from all karma, still the desire is self-liberation, for self-satisfaction. So it's not pleasing to Krishna, it's simply pleasing to oneself. So even the highest form, dharma, karma, moksha, the highest stage of so-called life, doesn't interest Krishna, is that even interesting? This is not aimed at pleasing him, it's still the selfish motivation. To get out of the trouble situation of the material world, that's good. It's recommended. But what did they get out for? Just to their self-pleasure. So then that's not pleasing to Krishna. To get out to please Krishna, that Krishna's interesting. So that is the goal of the devotee. So here is this. We were discussing yesterday with Ajahn Chakravarti. Because he says here that the sannyasis, they also receive fruition of their karma. And even if it be disinterested, their karma ends in atma mamata. So they come to the end of their karma. So there was a question was going on yesterday when we were speaking afterwards with Ajahn Chakravarti. That when your material desires are finished, at that point you can surrender to Krishna. So here, the sannyasi, his karma has ended. He's performed these activities nicely, been very strict in his sadhana, he's been through previous lives also, but now he's actually controlled his senses, controlled his mind, he's actually got free from desires. So his karma is actually finished. So he was making the point that until one's desires are finished, then when they're finished, that's the time when the person surrenders to Krishna. So then we have so many, we feel we have hundreds of millions of desires. How can we ever surrender to Krishna? Because we can't see the end of it, our desires. And that's the beginning and point of surrendering to Krishna. So here it says you can be purchased out by the fire will deal the roots of all karmas, this devotional service. The fire will deal means it's a very difficult experience that tests a person's power of endurance or a person's character. It's a difficult experience so we have rules and regulations. It's a difficult experience, we have to control it. But this is the test of a person's character. And we see when a person can't follow, he seems to lose then we call him not such a good character. If they fall down from the practices, they call it not such a good character. So it's a test of character. So these are tests of Krishna actually. They're purging out as much as you can maintain. That's really purging out all of the material desires we have. And that's why Prabhupada said, I've given you four rules and regulations. It's not so much. It's not so difficult, he said, at least. And when Krishna gives these tests, and it really purges out all the material desires. So by this process of devotional service, then although it appears that the, as it says here, karma is unending. You know, if you have desire to enjoy the material world, it's eternal. You can say it's eternal, that's what he's saying. But if you desire to stop it, then... But even now, you know, you can't see to the end of your desires. But by this process of Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, strictly following, you can purge out all of those misgivings very quickly. So until you come to the point of realizing you've got to surrender to Krishna. Sarvadharma parityaja manikam sarva. If you can do that immediately, then actually Krishna, that is the end of your karma. Even you have unlimited desires, but if you can come to that point of surrendering to Krishna, that's the end of your desire, material desire. If you don't continue after that, if you maintain very strictly, but that is actually the end of your material desires, and then you can surrender to Krishna. But you have to keep maintaining that surrender to Krishna. Always take shelter in Krishna. See, otherwise it's really not possible until one meets a devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord, and he gets his blessings and benedictions. It's only then actually that everything can stop. That he can surrender to Krishna is by the mercy of a devotee. That is the ultimate benediction of a devotee, that he allows you to serve Krishna. it's by the mercy of serving a pure devotee that one gets relieved. By his mercy, he gets relieved from all of his desires. He can actually take shelter at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. At that time, when you take shelter, it means as you are, it's all your desires and everything. And the pure devotee, he actually, if you're sincere and serious, he takes away all those desires. Without all that, your extraneous endeavors, by yourself, you get rid of all the desires. The pure devotee does it. If a person is sincere, just like the verse, Daya Bhak, he's just, all he's got to do is be sincere in Krishna consciousness. This was that Lord Brahma's prayer. All he's got to do is, the example, all the son has to do to get the inheritance of the father is remain alive. That's all. As long as he doesn't die, he's going to get the inheritance. So in Krishna consciousness, all you've got to do is stay in Krishna consciousness, always worshipping the Lord with your body, mind and words, thinking the sufferings and punishments are coming from Krishna. But still, you still worship him. He goes back to Godhead. It's his rightful claim. Adhaya Bhakti means it's his rightful claim. It's the natural inheritance. So it's the same thing as expressed there. He may have millions and millions of desires, but because he takes to the path of devotion, if he simply sticks to that, at the end of this life, he said he's guaranteed to go back to Godhead. Because Krishna takes away all of the sinful activity, all of the sinful desires. So we have to learn this art of, you know, completely taking shelter of the internal energy of the Lord, which means his devotees, the holy name, the devotional service, and keeping ourselves there in Krishna consciousness. Then the process becomes easy. It doesn't seem so far away. When we take the process, apply it seriously, then we get an immediate reaction. We get positive result. You get a positive result. When you're at your wit's end, it's something every the whole world seems crazy. You just go and take shelter at your lotus feet of Guru. Immediately, because you're so sincere and stressed at that time, you just take complete shelter and you make prayers. Immediately, you get some reaction. So much relief from it. Oh, you see clearly. It's immediate. Yeah. So it's like that. So anytime that we feel anything lacking, immediately go back and take shelter of the internal. Start again. Just start again. I just found something very, really revolutionary. I just had that. I go back, I'm going to Srila Prabhupada and say, please Srila Prabhupada, please teach me how to chant Hare Krishna. I don't know how to chant Hare Krishna. I thought I knew how to chant Hare Krishna all these years. He said, now I can go back and say, please, I don't know how to chant, please teach me how. And immediately, oh, so much better, isn't it? Because ask that ye may receive, Bible quotation. Also, Prabhupada says, one should approach the Guru and ask for the blessing. But like that, go back again, the new bhakti, becoming a new bhakti. Then everything, when you're sincere, you're sincerely doing it. Because the Guru wants nothing more than that, to give you Krishna consciousness. But you've got to be able to receive it, and you have to do it in the proper attitude. So then it becomes easy. You go there and you get this inspiration. Then you realize, wow, Krishna consciousness is actually right here. It's not so far away. But when we're not Krishna conscious, oh God, I got a million desires. I can't see the end of it. It goes on forever. It's so far away. But when you actually really take the process seriously and you ask for Krishna, you ask this because it's all personal movement. We're begging Krishna, we're begging the devotees. Then, wow, it's right here. It's right next to me. It's not, it's just here. It's right here. And Krishna consciousness becomes easy for me. So this is the process of bhakti as compared to all the other processes. Dharma is speaking. Shrima Bhagavatam ki jay. Shrima Bhadi ki. Samaveda Bhaktabhinda ki. Nithai Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Now, yeah, this is the whole system. We are weak-hearted. We're facing these weaknesses every moment. But the... We have to draw the line. And that line is surrender. It's complete surrender. When we deviate from the teachings and the philosophy, then we will become weak-hearted. And if you take shelter of the excuses of the weak philosophy, that will make us even more weak-hearted. So we have to understand very clearly, you know, what we really want. And basically the living entity, he's come here to enjoy. He has this enjoying spirit in the material world. And so this is causing so much trouble. This is making us weak-hearted. So with the philosophy, we have to be fixed in the philosophy and strong, that we can face these weaknesses when they're coming, and they're coming at every moment, because that's Maya's business in this world, present at every moment. But philosophically we understand that the soul is an illusion identifying through the four seekers with the body and the enjoyer of the body and senses. The soul doesn't even touch the body. We don't even touch it. The only connection is by illusion. So it's actually not possible to enjoy it. The so-called happiness and distress and lamentation, these are from the mind. And we're not the mind, we're just experiencing the mind and the sensations, and we're identifying them through the false ego. But actually we can't touch them, so all that's going on is not being enjoyed by us at all. So actually we come in the material world to enjoy it, but actually this is an impossible mission. Mission impossible. This is actually mission impossible, to enjoy the material world. This is our philosophy. We should really understand it. We're actually on a mission impossible. Everyone in the world, they come here, but it's a mission impossible. But the possible mission is that we can develop our Krishna consciousness. We can get the happiness of Krishna consciousness, which is far greater than the happiness in the material world. So we're fixed on that. No, we realize what it is. Although we can't see how Maya's working so nicely, but at least is not, you know, she's presenting some enjoyment. Oh, it's simply, you know, it's the mission impossible. At least that point, one point, whatever point it takes, anyway, to keep us aloof from Maya, and also to help us to take complete shelter of Krishna, and the Guru whenever it comes. Otherwise, if we use it as an excuse. I got to go through it. It's my karma. You know, when my karma comes to an end, then I can surrender. Anyway, one more time is coming. But then that's not. That becomes namaparad. That's not at all good for our philosophy. And then we're committing strength, sins on the strength of chanting the holy name. So that's not at all good. If we start using excuses. So. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives when we're plagued by Maya's influence, he gives a very nice a way to get free of that. And in this way also, it's just you can test your strength. This is a test of strength for devotees. It's in Manasika, his translation of Manasika. And he says that, he talks about other senses, they're like highwaymen, they're robbers, they wait and they pounce on anything that comes by, any sense gratification. And the poor soul is, completely bewildered. So he's saying that when Maya is coming and attacking like this, he says that you should call upon the name of the Vaishnava, the name of your guru, who you have taken shelter. He says call upon the servant of Bakashatru. That means the killer of the Baka demon, Krishna. The servant of that one who kills a demon, a Baka, because Baka is, he represents deceit. He's got those big beaks, two beaks. So this, the deceitful person, he has two angles in Krishna. He says one thing, he means another. So Krishna split the beaks, he broke the deceit. So call upon the person who's the servant of Baka Shakya, who can kill this deceit, because we're promising Guru, yes, we won't do this, we won't do this. As soon as the advantage comes, Maya comes. But we've made, they're a deceitful, the Guru. So he says, call upon his name loudly. Loudly call upon his name. And this is a very good test. When Maya's coming, and you can see she is coming, call very loudly upon your Guru's name. And she runs like anything. She's so scared of Guru. Because Guru's business is, he's come to chastise her, Maya. He's the greatest enemy of Maya. Maya's not afraid of Krishna, because Krishna even sanctions Maya to come to his devotee. Nothing moves without it. But if the devotee desires enough, Maya comes and Krishna actually sanctions it. So he's not going to help you. He may not help you if you desire it. He sanction it. But the guru, he will never desire. He's so strong. Pick up his club. And Maya flees like anything. But this is the test. When Maya is coming, you see it. If it will come out loudly, if you can, if you want it, that's the test. Then you actually see your strength at that time. Am I strong enough to shout, or is Maya too much tempting today? But he said, this is a very, very good, when I tried it, it works immediately. That's fine. If we can do it every time, I'm not always successful. But when you do it, you can see it really works. It's a really good process. Shout the name of your guru loudly, Maya, immediately, please. Also, you're scared because you made so many promises and you're doing wrong.